From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Delighted to welcome back to John Hannam Meets the wonderful Gary Wilmot. We first met 33 years ago at Sandown Pavilion when you used to bring your own show.
I did. I think that show was called Gary Wilmot & Co.
It was.
I had a great time touring in that one. Done many since, of course, and then moved into the more legitimate side of the theatre, as it's called.
You've had an amazing career. I'm going to talk about it, obviously. I want to go back first, Gary Wilmot, to when you used to come and camp at Wycliffe Bay on the Isle of Wight.
Did you remember? Yes. Well, pretty much every weekend in the summer, me and my friends used to hire a five-man tent. Sorry, it was a two-man tent, and we squeezed five bods into it. And we used to, get the last train down to Portsmouth and the ferry across and then a bus round to, it was great. Bembridge, Wycliffe Bay.
Yes.
A camping field there, and we used to go there all the time.
You got chased by a bull once.
Yeah, we did.
Yes. What do you remember?
I'd love to hear the original recordings, you know, of our chats over the years. We went to a go-kart place, and it was a taxi ride away, but when we came out of the go-kart place, we could virtually see our campsite. We didn't know it was about 4 miles away, so we decided to make a beeline over fences and through shrubbery and woodlands and all the rest of it. And being city lads, we didn't know anything, you know. And we eventually arrive in this field, and it's a triangular field, and there were bulls, there were about four or five bulls at one end. Listen, I'm from the city, so they could have been horses for all I know, but we think they were bulls. And so we managed to make a dash for it, and of course it attracted them, and they followed. So my friend Johnny Tennant, who I'm still in contact with now, Johnny, he ripped his best trousers as well, so perhaps shouldn't have set out on the expedition in the first place.
I know exactly where you were, because that looks closer than it is.
Oh, right, okay, well then, yes.
And your tent caught fire once, didn't it?
That's probably more than once that's happened.
Oh, more than once.
we also had one. It was one of these igloo tents, and you pumped it up, and it had four sides, but they were curved and reached a point at the top, and it was like, I can't even explain really, but in the night, I woke up, and the top of the tent was just above my nose, and there was a puncture in it, so the air had gone out.
And of course, I was a great fan of the Southlanders. Oh,
my dad was in the Southlanders.
I know
he was.
Yes, I used to love them.
Yeah, they were a wonderful four-part harmony group, or a boy band, as they would be called now.
Yes.
My dad came over here on the Empire Windrush in 1948, met my mum, and they subsequently had me and my elder brother Larry, and became part of a very popular group at that time. They did television and recordings and all sorts, but they're probably best known for the song "I Am a Mole and I Live in a Hole."
Yes.
And my dad, I'm so proud to say that my dad was the bass voice of that group, and so got to sing that line, "I am a mole and I live in a hole."
They were a fantastic group to watch, 6-5 Special. They were sort of very visual as well as being good singers, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is all post Tamla Motown and Four Tops. But my Uncle Vernon, who sadly died last year, he was the leader of the group and insisted that they were very slick. And they were slick by all accounts. I mean, my father died when I was very young. I don't remember anything about their
stage show. Have you seen videos, Gary, or not?
I saw one of them singing Kokomo, a song called Kokomo. But they were very slick. And I can remember working with the Bachelors quite some time ago. They remember the Southlanders. And they said, oh, we stole their bow. We love the way they bowed. And so we stole it.
Before I trace your story, currently you're in Flowers for Mrs. Harris at the Chichester Festival Theatre until 29th of September.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a little bit's time. Showbiz debut was in Benidorm, but you were sort of a waiter, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Well, my show business debut was the day I was born, it seems. My father called me Junior because I was christened the same name as him. And I was Junior all the way through my life. And I don't know why, but I just seemed to have a funny wit about me, or I wanted to be funny desperately. There was a saying a long time ago that stand-up comedians aren't funny until they're in their 30s, because we don't trust what they're saying until they're in their 30s. We don't trust it as being the truth. Of course, modern comedians have, of course, poured water on that fire. But yeah, I was always trying to make jokes and do impressions. You know, I don't want to get heavy about it, but looking back, it may well have been because I was one of the few black boys in a white community. And so, you know, I can only suggest or even think now that that it might have been, if I could make my mates laugh or make people laugh, then I would be accepted, I suppose. And that's where it started. But you're right, in 1976, after a couple of holidays out in Spain, we about seven or eight of us decided to jack our jobs in and go out there and spend the summer out there doing all sorts of things. I used to give out tickets. I was one of those irritating young lads who would disturb you while you're having your sleep on the beach and thrust a ticket to a nightclub in your fist, and we thought we were the bee's knees, and so I did that, and eventually got a job in a place called the Rover's Return, which was about as removed as from the original Rover's Return as this room we're in now. But anyway, I was a waiter there, and found I'd got better tips if I delivered the drinks or food to the table as Norman Wisdom or as Michael Crawford or Tommy Cooper or something. So so that's where it started. I came back to England, and somebody suggested that I got into show business.
You were a scaffolder for a while. Now, yep. Scaffolders these days, they're in demand, aren't they? It's a good business to be in, isn't it?
Anything in the building trade is, yeah, yes. Absolutely. It's fine going to university, but when you come out the other end, you need a job. And by the time those guys are coming out of university, scaffolders have been working 4 years, bricklayer's been working 4 years, you know. So, it's a great business to be in the building trade. And we did have a lot. I mean, it wasn't like it is now, that you're always hooked onto a safety line and there's steel toe cap boots and hard hats and gloves and everything. When I was started, there was none of that. It was all very reckless. I mean, we were little soft training shoes, and I'm amazed that nobody got, well, one of my mates did get badly injured, actually, but that was nothing to do with what he was wearing. He fell off a scaffold and broke his back. But it's a dangerous occupation, and I'm pleased to be out of it.
I remember with great affection Gary Wilmot and Judy. I can remember seeing your TV debut.
Yeah.
And you know what, Gary, I had an idea you were going to really do well.
Oh, thank you. And thank you.
You've proved me right in a
way.
Well,
yes. Do I have to give you any money now, John? Do I have for that? It was. When I first came into the business, I was advised by an agent, because I didn't have an act, I didn't even know what to do. He sent me to a guy called Alan Clive, who was an impressionist at that time. He'd been on Who Do You Do, big impressionist program from the 70s, and he was giving tuition to new performers. And so I went there, and so too did somebody I didn't know, Judy King, and she went to him for the same reasons. And he thought it would be a good idea for us to be put together as a double act, and it did. It was a tremendous springboard to the public consciousness, because we went on New Faces and we got the highest points that anyone had ever got to that point.
Do you remember how many you got?
We got 116.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, we did, yeah. Later on, that was shattered by Patty Boulay, who went on and got perfect marks. But that was a year, maybe 2 years later. But at that time, it was a big deal. And, you know, 18, 20 million people watched New Faces. Mm. So you were immediately a star, if you like. You were shining. So and I've been working ever since to keep that star brightly shining. So.
Exactly. You went back years later as a panellist on that, didn't you, I think?
Yeah, I did. It was more for fun than anything. I mean, I was asked to do it. It was when Marty Kane had taken over, the great Marty Kane. And they just said, would you like to go back as a panellist? And the weird thing was that there was a guy on there who had been in the business longer than me, and a guy called Andy Feet, a comedian, really good stand-up comic.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, and I was on there, and I was actually criticising this man that had got 10 years more experience than I had, and I felt very uncomfortable. I think I only did the one. I felt very uncomfortable doing it. I think Nina Miskow, whatever her name.
Oh, yes.
I think she was on it as well. but it was when it came from the Hippodrome in Birmingham.
When I met her and interviewed her, she was such a sweetie, really.
Yeah, yeah, she is. No, I've met her. And but at the time, nobody knew how to pronounce her name.
Exactly.
Is it Polish, or I think it is? Yeah.
Hi, Jill Blaines. It's Nick Frisby here saying John Hannam is a puppet.
Then, of course, your solo career, Copycats, was great for you. Well, a lot of guys, wasn't it? Impressionists, really.
When people used to say to me, I would do that for the experience, get up in a pub and work for the experience. You don't really know what experience is. It's difficult to explain. And just doing it for the experience of having done it, and you learn something every time you do. You don't realise it. It's imperceptible, really. But over time, you can look back. And I look back on those days of television, like You and Me and a school children's programme that was very popular, and Copycats, as a great learning curve. I learned so much in those shows. And even now, I put things into practice that I learned back in those days. Of course, the actual production of television is very, very different to those days. There was lots of money around. I don't mean necessarily for the performers, but to create good product. And and you were given time, and now it all seems to be a bit loo roll, you know. So, but you know, there were happy days, and working with Hale and Pace and Kate Robbins on a show called Saturday Gang as well was another one, big old sketch show. And you get to learn to work with other people. And having come from, Judy and I were together for 2 years, and then I set out on a solo career. Mm. And having been my own driver, I washed my own shirts and ironed them. I was completely a solo act. It was really nice to get to work with other people and learn how they work. And now I know it's a collaborative art, and you get the very best out of it when everybody's working for everyone else.
You did Q Gary and Get Fresh and That's right. Laughter Show, didn't you?
Look at all these titles. Where have you got them from? Good heavens above. I did loads of stuff on television. In fact, in the 80s, I was probably never off the television, which has stood me in good stead now. Sometimes it gets me a table in a restaurant or an extra spoonful of custard or cream or something. So that's nice. And I always say that theatre particularly is about, we peddle memories. I mean, we do great shows, but we peddle memories. And if you get it right, people never, ever forget it. And I did a show 30 years ago now called Me and My Girl that they recently did here at the CFT. And that show, I still have people coming up to me today saying, oh, we loved that show. We saw you in it. And it's always nice to hear.
It's funny, my next line to you was Me and My Girl, an important step, sort of changed your career because it made you popular with a wider audience, I suppose, in a way, did it?
Well, a theatre audience, yes. Mm. I didn't even know what a musical was, really, before I did Me and My Girl. And I went to see it because I was with an agency and one of the performers was in the show. And so they got a little Sharabang together and a little Beano. And we went down to see her in it. She was in the ensemble. And I remember sitting in row G, Gary, I remember sitting there and thinking, this is the epitome of entertainment. It was just remarkable. Everything about the show, I loved it. And I had no idea that 6 months later I'd be auditioning for that role. In fact, I didn't audition for the role. It was a very interesting story. I was rehearsing just around the corner from the Adelphi Theatre in the rehearsal rooms at the back of the Fortune Theatre for a pantomime I was doing in Birmingham. And I got a phone call from my agent saying, Mike Cochran, the director of Me and My Girl, is auditioning for Sally Smith's. And I went, that's not for me, is it? She went, no, I've managed to get you a meeting with him because he does a lot in the West End, and I think that would be a good move for you. And I couldn't disagree with that. So I went round and I saw him, and because I knew I wasn't auditioning for Me and My Girl, I was as relaxed as you could possibly be. And I walked down, and they were in the auditorium, the whole creative team, and I was literally gushing about the show, which is the thing you shouldn't really do. But I suppose my honesty was enough to convince them that I was right for the job and I was genuine. And I was pointing at the seat I sat in. I was commenting on this big house comes forward and it spins round and on that piano comes on its own. And, oh, it's just fantastic. And the colours, the music, the atmosphere. And I was really going overboard, and really you shouldn't do that. You know, compliment them, yes, but not that. Anyway, the next day they phoned me up and said, would Gary like to meet the producer because we think it'd be good for Bill Snibson?
And you were.
And yeah, it was great. 3 years I was with the show and it was great.
That's sort of a great show because you can sort of ad-lib a bit, can't you, when you've got those particular sort of...
Well, like many shows, it is understandable if an audience thinks you are ad-libbing. But like a really good pantomime, for instance. I mean, I did the pantomime at the Palladium last year, and I'm doing it again this year, and working with the great Julian Clary. And Julian is fantastic. You think that it's all ad-libbed and it's all off the cuff, but he's an incredible performer, and it's all worked out to the nth degree. And the only time really we ad-lib is if things go wrong, and then you have to kind of get yourself out of it, if you like.
Jack Tinker liked you, didn't he? He said a musical talent of the highest order.
Yeah, he wasn't so bad himself, bless him. God rest him. No, he was like the theatre critic of the time, and he was very, very complimentary. And of course all of that helps to bolster a performer in musical theatre.
You got a nomination.
A TMA award. When it went on tour, all the theatre managers throughout the country, Theatre Managers Association, I think, they all vote on who they think was the best show, best actor, best actress, and all the rest of it. And I got nominated for that, yeah. So
wonderful.
I'm very proud about that.
When you look back, Gary, Carmen Jones you did, Copacabana, which was the British premiere, wasn't it? Really?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was pretty much the world premiere. They had done a floor show of it somewhere, Atlanta or something like that, and it was only about 45 minutes. And of course, they'd made it 2 hours, a 2 hour West End show. But yeah, that was a very exciting time. And probably one of the few times in my life that I've experienced true glamour at the press launch. It was very glamorous. I mean, Barry Manilow was there, of course, that attracted attention. Yeah. And there must have been 50 or 60 newsmen and photographers. And I just remember a big bank of cameras, all shapes and sizes. It was like looking in Jessop's shop window. It was quite amazing. And yeah, that was truly glamorous.
Did you meet him? I bet you
did. Oh, yes. Worked with him for about 5-6 weeks.
Wow.
Yes, on that.
Nice guy.
More, in fact. More, because he stayed here once we were up as well and was, you know, coming in. And he produced the album, one of the best show albums, produced albums that I've ever heard, you know, and certainly been involved with. Yeah, lovely, really nice man and really knows his job. You don't stay at the top as long as he has without exactly. knowing what you're doing.
When you played bottom in A Midsummer Night's Dream, that was a sort of another arrival for you, wasn't it, in a
well,
way?
Well, that just shows you the kind of unintended diversity of my career.
Yes.
To go from Barry Manilow to playing Shakespeare is quite a step. Didn't realise it at the time, but I was asked to play. I hadn't done any Shakespeare before, and not particularly a fan of Shakespeare. And they said, I think you'd make a good bottom. Or did they say, I think you had a good bottom? It might have been that. I got confused, turned up on the first day of rehearsal, and there I was in the show. But no, in that production was Benedict Cumberbatch. He was playing one of, I think, Lysander. It might have been Demetrius, but I think it was Lysander. So yeah, he was just Benedict Cumberbatch, really. He was just Ben.
He's going to have a house built on the Isle of Wight.
Is he really?
Yes, he
is. Oh,
wow. He got married on the Isle of Wight.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's nice. And a lovely man. But everybody that worked in the park was lovely. It's very, very rare. That's Regent's Park Theatre and open-air theatre. It was, good.
We also met Santa Claus the Musical at the Mayflower,
yeah.
didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I've worked at Mayflower quite a few times.
Yeah.
In fact, that was probably one of the most successful venues for me and my girl as well.
Mm.
I think we were there for about 5 weeks.
Yes, you were.
4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But Santa Claus the Musical for Michael Rose. Yeah, great fun. It's nice to be involved in new work. There was a lot of work to do in the 5 or 6 weeks rehearsal we had. A script had never been done before. There had been few workshops. And so, yeah. And the lovely Bob Barakoff was in that too. He was delighted. And a real joy to be with and work with.
Talking about the Isle of Wight, his first ever summer season, he'd been working in an office and he decided he wanted to become a pro. Yeah. So he came to a very small holiday camp on the Isle of Wight and he was there for about 16 weeks.
Oh, was he really?
That was his debut.
Oh, wow.
And when I met him in that show, like I did you, he was remembering with great affection, that first summer season, really. You recorded some great albums over the years, Gary, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I have. I mean, one of the most successful was produced in the... And the arrangements were done by Mike Batt of Womble's fame. He's a remarkable man, and we called it at Abbey Road Studios with the London Symphony Orchestra. And that was a great time in my life. It was just absolutely fantastic to have such a quality man who's since become a friend, Mike. And that was a good time. There was another one called Love Situation. I've enjoyed making music. I've been very, very lucky. For somebody who started out as a comedian, the number of orchestras I've sung in front of is just incredible. Most of them. And the BBC Concert Orchestra, of course, because of Showstoppers all those years ago. I had the great pleasure of working with them under Mike Reed for about 7 weeks, I think we were. Yeah, that was a fantastic show.
I remember going to the house of, to the home of Lionel Bart, and he was quite chuffed. I said, what have you been doing lately, Lionel? He said, well, the other day, he said, I had a great thrill. He said, I recorded with Gary Wilmot.
Yes, that's right. I was doing, the album that Mike produced was about, we said we'd do songs from shows, of course, but sometimes we did two or three. And one of the ones we chose was from Oliver. And it's Consider Yourself, and Lionel, yeah, it's worth buying that because it's a fantastic arrangement.
It is, yeah.
And Lionel is in full voice there, and it's great to hear him. I wish he'd have made more albums. I really do, because not the greatest voice in the world, but such character and absolutely in tune. It's lovely.
He certainly liked you.
Yeah, I liked him too. He was a lovely man, and he said to me one day... I'd seen a documentary about him, about his exploits in the 60s, and he lost all of his money.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And I said to him, you know, what went on? He said, you know that phrase, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. He said, well, that was me, and I was there. I can't remember anything about the 60s at all. He said, and I lost everything. And I said, oh, you regrets? He went, nope, I'd do it all over again because I had a ball.
I tell you what I have got. I've got quite a long interview with him with all his music, which I did at his house. He mentioned you.
Oh, nice.
Would you like me to send you a
copy? I would like that very much, yeah. First time I met him was in the Ivy. It shows you how just getting a little idea can just become such a part of our language. While I was waiting for Lionel in the restaurant, the waiter said, would you like a newspaper? And I opened up the newspaper, and there was a small column about GM Foods. And the headline was Food, Glorious Food. And Lionel created that line. Yes. There it was, the headline in the national paper.
Wow.
Okay, let's meet the families. Oh, sorry, wrong show. I'm Les Dennis, but you're listening to John Hannam Meets.
Right, flowers for Mrs. Harris. You're here at Chichester until 29th of September.
Yes, I am.
And you play several characters, don't you?
Yeah, mainly I'm the major, and I'm enjoying that very much. I look out every night, and probably half the audience are made up of majors or ex-majors. Yeah. I know, you keep the title, I think, don't you? But so I'd be interested to hear whether my portrayal is correct, but I'm doing my best. Mainly the major, and then I play a waiter and a customs officer, someone else in there as well. And it's tremendous fun. I've done a lot of shows in my time. I've not come across one like this before. The music is exquisite. The cast is so well cast, which is not always the case. Very often there's somebody who's a bit of a weak link, but those people who've just got a few lines right the way up to the brilliant, the amazing Claire Burt. That's a discovery. It's just superb, absolutely superb. I can't speak highly of this show. And it's my job to go on things like this on the radio and television, and you say things, and sometimes you mean them, sometimes you don't. I tell you, from the heart, is just the best show around. And I really pray that it goes to the West End, because it more than deserves that.
This is your first Chichester Festival show, isn't it?
Production, yeah. I've been here on touring shows. Yeah. Pirates of Penzance, I came playing the Pirate King. And it's my first time, and it's just a great place to work. If you can't work with these kind of facilities and these kind of people, then you shouldn't be in the business, because everybody here just wants to help you.
Didn't you play a badger?
Played a badger in Wind in the Willows.
Yes.
Yeah, I did at the Palladium. That was last summer. A real joy. Styles and Drew music. And I think I'd got the best song in the show as well, which was nice. I'm very pleased. In the last week of production here, I'm actually working not too far away from here. I'm directing my own play at the Bognor Regis Alexander Theatre.
Are you?
Yeah. It's a play I wrote, started writing it 2 years ago, finished about 18 months ago. And they're inspired by the Chichester Festival Theatre organisation here. And Hazel Latus, who is kind of the CEO programmer, if you like, she wants a programme of new work. And I just happened to bump into her. I knew her from days of old. And it's a real chance meeting. They say, you know, it's a lot of luck in this business, but you have to be ready. And in this case, I was ready. I got a script that I'd literally just finished writing. And I said, I'll finish one last night. She said, well, come down, let's workshop it with some actors and see how it goes. So I spent 2 or 3 days down here at Bognor Regis. And on the train going back, she said, well, we all love it, so let's do it. So wow. We start rehearsal for that in 2 weeks' time.
When you were sat in that tent at Wycliffe Bay all those years ago,
I know.
You must have exceeded any dreams you had, really.
I'll be honest, I didn't have any dreams.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I had no dreams. I don't even know if... Oh, probably in the last 10 years, I have a few kind of little ambitions. I mean, writing and directing a play is one, and I want to move more and more into directing now. I still enjoy performing, but it's just, you know, an extra little something. But no, I never had any desire to be in the business. I just went with the flow. People were saying, oh, you're funny, you know, we'll put you on here and we'll put you... And I was going, okay. And a phrase I came up with a couple of months ago was, I found something that everyone else thought I was good at, and so I just carried on doing it. But I do love it, and I do enjoy it, of course. So I'm pleased that they think I'm good at something that I actually enjoy doing.
It's always been a pleasure talking to you over the last 33 years, Mr. Wilmot.
See you in 33 years.
You still look quite young as well.
You're not so bad yourself, mate.
So you're here at Chichester in Flowers with Mrs. Harris until September the 29th.
Yeah.
Wish you success with that, and of course at the Palladium Panto.
Oh, thank you very much indeed.
And in Bognor Regis, of course.
Yeah. Sweet Lorraine, it's cool. Check it out.
Is it?
Yeah.
You are busy. Thanks, Gary.
Pleasure.
Who is it?
Who's who?
Him.
Who?
John Hammam.
John Hammam. John Hammam.
John Hammam.
John Hammam.
And never mind that. Hey, rock on, Johnny.
Hey, see you soon, Johnny, baby.
John Hannam Meets on I Love White Radio.
Grateful thanks, as ever, to Gary Wilmot. Gary mentioned some other shows, including the world premiere of his own play, Sweet Lorraine, which runs at the Alexander Theatre Bognor from Wednesday, October the 17th till the 20th, 7:30pm in the evenings, and on the Saturday, a 2:30pm matinee. Looking further ahead, this coming Christmas, Snow White at the London Palladium from December the 8th to January the 13th. The star cast: Julian Clary, Paul Zerdin, Nigel Havers, Gary Wilmot, Vincent Simone and Flavia Cacace, Mystery, plus supporting cast. You've been listening to John Hannah Meets, courtesy of Isle of Wight Radio. Don't forget to look at my website, johnhannam.com, for news of more interviews and how you might purchase my books. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.